welcome to Coleman Knight Conversations, a series of discussions on relevant issues of the day. I want to thank you all for joining us in our presentation. It occurs every Thursday, occurs once a month on Thursdays between the hours of 3 and 4. With that, I'd like to bring up what we're talking about today, which is the failure to launch the positives and negatives of adult children, also known as the boomerang kids, those adult children who seem to be living at home longer than they did in the past. We're talking about adult children who are not attending school, but continue to live at home. As I said earlier, these are called boomerang kids today. From what we are seeing, statistics, children are living at home for longer than they were before, at least in the last 30 to 40 years. To some extent, that's probably not so bad because young adult brains are not fully developed until around age 25, which is why driving accidents are more common amongst younger drivers, and why insurance rates for car owners begin to drop after the age of 25 to 27, why risky behavior is more common under people in their teens and in their early 20s, and it also explains why back for many, many years, supervision of college students on the campus used to occur, and it was only with the thought process and the feelings that during the Vietnam War, where so many people were dying, that thought was, if you're young enough to die in a war, then you're an adult, and you should be treated as such. And it was then, in the early 70s, that the voting age was changed and dropped to 18. Drinking laws were changed so that most people could drink. And supervision at colleges decreased tremendously. Of course, that has now started to go the other way. But it seems that there was actually from empirical observation that parents and schools were onto something. And today I'll give some quotes about children at home and et cetera. One of the major reasons today is obviously children at home is the economics. We've been in what's called the Great Recession. And according to Gallup, as of May 9, 2012, 32% of individuals between the ages of 18 and 29 are underemployed. That includes both people who are unemployed as well as people who are working part-time jobs but are searching to work full-time. Now, that same poll by Gallup shows that the age groups 30 to 49, only 14% are what would be called underemployed. Between the ages of 50 and 64, 13.6% are underemployed. And for those over age 65, 12.7% are underemployed. As this shows that, except for the 18 to 29 group, it's pretty close, 14% to 12.7% isn't that huge a difference. And that's for all the ages from 30 through past 65. Now, Pew Research Center conducted a survey in early 2012 that had some very surprising results. One of the amazing parts to me was that in 1940, approximately 28% of adult children who were not students lived with parents due to World War II and the boom years of the 50s and 60s. The number of adult children living with parents steadily declined until around 1980, when it dropped to its lowest level of about 11%. So we went from 28% in 1940 to 11% in 1980. From 1980 onward, that percentage began to slowly rise. By 1990, it was at 15%, and that percentage, 15%, stayed pretty constant through the millennium, or the year 2000, when the dot-com bubble burst. At that point, we've had a floodgate of adult children beginning to live with parents, and that may explain why boomerang kids was coined, that term was coined. By 2010, the last year of that statistic, there were approximately 22% of that age group, adult children living with their parents. So we were looking at percentages that seemed similar to the U.S. as it was near the Great Depression. A more recent poll, funded by the National Endowment for Financial Education and conducted by Harris Interactive, found that 40% of American adults who are not students since 2010 are either living at home or had done so in the recent past. This statistic is 1.5 times greater than the 1940 statistic of about 28%, and almost double what it was by the Pew Research Center poll. That's pretty amazing, because this is when we would think that economics would be stating that people would be getting out of homes. But if you think about it, there is a difficulty in obtaining mortgages that become much tighter, and having a job is becoming much more difficult. So that combination may explain some of it, but I don't think it explains all of it. And that same poll, one done by Harris for the Financial Education, the Endowment for Financial Education, found that 26% of parents with children at home took on their children's debts, and 7% of that same group are delaying their retirement because of the debts that they had taken on for their children. A California study shows that in 2000, about 24% of adult children lived at home. By 2010, that number had jumped to 31%. So on all of the polls and all of the statistics are pointing at a growing number of families are living at home for longer periods, and we're seeing multi-generational households. Now, on many levels, that may not be as bad as it may seem. First, adults in that age group have yet to have a fully developed prefrontal cortex. The prefrontal cortex doesn't fully develop until around age 25. And the frontal lobes are considered emotional control centers. So what does that really mean? That means that the ability focusing attention isn't fully developed. Organizing thoughts and problem solving are still occurring. They're not fully developed. Foreseeing and weighing possible consequences of behavior. That's a biggie. Considering the future, making predictions isn't fully developed. Forming strategies and planning is not fully developed. And the ability to balance short-term rewards with long-term goals hasn't yet fully developed. modulation of intense emotions hasn't fully developed. Impulse control and delaying gratifications haven't fully developed. Inhibiting inappropriate behavior and initiating appropriate behavior hasn't been fully developed. So what this says is that even though somebody may be physically look like they're an adult, say they're late teens, early 20s, the physiological development of the brain hasn't fully developed. Now, the military knew about this from World War II, and during the years that we had it drafted for us, once somebody reached the age of 27 to 28, they were no longer eligible for the draft. And part of that was that, and as it was explained, the military knew that they took 10 people, and they were between the ages of 18 and 25, and they told them that 80% of you were going to be killed taking a particular hill. Almost all of them will think, okay, when I take that hill, me and somebody else are going to be the only two who will survive. Do the same thing with people over the age of 25, let's say 28-year-olds and more, and they will go and say, 80% aren't going to make it. This is a suicide mission. I'm not going to go unless I volunteer. We actually saw that play out during the invasion of Iraq, when National Guard troops were called in, and the average age of them was approximately, I think, in the 40s. And there was a group, I believe, from Massachusetts that was asked to go from one area, I guess, north, from Baghdad north to, I think it was Kirkuk, in Iraq. And they were told that 60 or 70% of the people would get wounded, and the National Guards, or Army Reserves, whichever they were, refused to do it, saying that that was a suicide mission, and they couldn't order somebody. They had to take volunteers only, and they were actually put up for court-martial. And when the newspapers got to it, if you remember, the court-martials were dropped, and the military then decided to go back to their plan that they had during the Vietnam War and earlier, where they did not ask those type of things from anybody except if they were of a certain age or younger. So it's actually, there is a major issue. And we've also see this with pricing of car insurance. Insurance rates for people 25 and younger, much higher than for people who are over the age of 25. And not because the reflexes or anything are worse for that age group, because they're actually better. But what they find is that they're willing to take more risks. And this is sort of what we're saying, the instant gratification. And there's more difficulty with behavior. So as a result of that, may not be so bad having more years at home and some modulation of that. May be good. Now, another piece that we're seeing in this, and this was stated in the Pew Research Center, was they discovered that 48% of families said that there was no change in the relationship by having the boomerang kids come back. But a full 24% said that relations deteriorated, and 25% said there was no, that the relations improved. So I'm going to say about half didn't make any difference to having the kids back. The relationships stayed the same. For one quarter, it got better. For one quarter, it got worse. I also thought it was interesting that 22% of these boomerang children are, that's actually incorrect, 22% of all adult children, whether or not they're boomerang children, receive an allowance from their adult parents. And the Pew Research Center also found that 80% of the boomerang kids who stayed at home stated that they did not have enough money to live the life they wanted, whereas 55% of those who were living on their own had the same response. And these, in this group, was paying for their own apartments, et cetera, et cetera. But 55% is a much smaller group than 80%. So there was a significant difference, and it does seem that it is economically driven. But now that we've reviewed the statistics, we need to think of ramifications of children living at home. In general, the key is having the children, contribute to the household. That means taking on responsibilities just like they did at college, or if they had roommates, and contributing financially to the household, as well as physically, et cetera, so that we are not taking on and expecting adult children to go back to their more childlike behavior, but to allow them to start to contribute and make a greater effect to the greater family unit. There is a lot of studies out that show that contributing and seeing a benefit of what you're doing for the world as well as family unit that you're connected with or those around you helps to build self-esteem and is a big component of somebody's well-being. So if somebody does have boomerang kids, it's very important that they contribute both financially and to the upkeep of the house around them, and that has to be worked out ahead of time. And part of this is not just that minimizing the financial burden to a family, but if you think about it as the parents get to be in their 50s, 60s, 70s, and older, just having somebody who's younger who can change light bulbs, mow lawns, help to work around the house becomes a much greater benefit. Contributing financially to the success of the household by helping to support, by buying food and paying some rent, etc., also means that the parents will not be in a worse position financially or will minimize the negative effect of supporting a child. And presumably, the adult child's expenses will be lower living with the parents so that it sort of becomes a win-win. And that is actually a very good situation if we can foster it. It also, in many ways, creates a safety net, just as our government safety net is being stretched thin. We have parents taking in and keeping the household together for the adult children. We have the adult children assisting to the household for these parents, some of whom may also be financially more difficult. We have retired groups, a greater number of retired groups coming in this having a person who can help contribute both physically and financially to the household is also a plus. So on many levels, we're going back to a system that existed prior to the Great Society, where families were much more involved and much more and did much more of the taking care of individuals. And that may actually be a good thing. Maybe that is one of the positives, you know. And as the Pew Research statistic was showing, for approximately 75% of the households that do this, either the relation gets better or it has no real effect. I imagine that for the 25, approximately one quarter, where things worsen, it is issues about the added strain that that person, that having the adult child back, which probably means that they're not contributing as much, and that's creating issues. So that's another reason why it's important for adult children to help contribute and make things in the family work better. It then also gives the ability for these adult children to set aside nest eggs to eventually buy households. Right now, we're at one of the periods where few, very small percentage of 18 to 34-year-olds are buying homes. That is extremely typical. More somebody, and that's related to the economy and interest rates. I've looked at a graph over the last 50 years, and for home ownership for the 18 to 34-year-olds is very sensitive to interest rates. Right now they're about as low as they've ever been, so that's not it, and the economy. The economy is in one of the worst shape that it's been for the last 60 years, so that is a driver. But back in the early 80s, when interest rates were very high, that group, very few individuals of that group were buying homes. And we had the same thing happen around 2000, 2001, when the dot-com bust occurred. There was a big drop. So we've seen this before. I'm not overly worried about that on a long-term basis. I do think that what we're seeing may have some significant changes as investors. Multi-generational households probably means that the demand for housing will be lower. It also means that a lot of the associated economic items, such as large appliances, et cetera, new carpeting, new furniture, will be strained for the next years. And if this trend continues, which I think it's a longer-term trend about multi-generational living and boomerang kids, then we're going to see that this is going to continue for a much longer period. And I think, to some extent, that will be a plus for the economy long-term. I also think that it will decrease the impact and our dependence on China to some degree and make us more competitive. We're already seeing some manufacturing. We're seeing manufacturing coming back to the U.S. as transportation costs and the yuan increase. The U.S. is becoming more competitive again for manufacturing. These pieces are beginning to play out. We'll also have an issue that the longer the recession occurs, the longer this group is going to have problems getting out of the boomerang. In other words, creating their own households. And we may be seeing a generation where they will be known as living at home. And what effect will that have? Obviously, they will, to some extent, create closer ties amongst the generation. But economically, that's going to have a big effect because housing demand will be lower. Repairs to homes, they may inherit homes more than they did before. And all of those are items that we don't usually see. The other part is how much of this may be related to the ethnic changing of America. We have, starting this year, the number of minorities are greater than the number of Caucasians, and that's a first. Is this part of some cultural differences amongst the U.S. where there are some groups that younger or that are more likely to be boomerang in addition to the economy, because the trend was occurring way before. I mean, in the middle of the boom of the 90s and during the dot-com boom, we had an increase in the trend for, it was a slight increase, but we did have an increase in the trend of people, boomerang kids coming back. Now, that trend came much steeper after the 2001 bust, but it was still there. So what's causing that is something to look at. Now, I've been talking for quite a bit, so I'm going to leave it open for any questions that somebody may have.
Hi, Rich, Stephen. One of the questions that I have is on these children or adult children that are coming back, are they typically all single, or is there also a trend of what used to be the extended family where multi-generations live together?
Most are single, but we are seeing an increase in multi-generations living together as mm-hmm. that has occurred, but it's the vast majority are single, but the group that is married and coming back is starting to increase, but it's a small number, but the trend is in that favor.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And just to give you an idea, it's approximately, right now we're at approximately, you know, one in five, a little better, almost one in four adult children coming back.
Yeah, wow.
And at one point it was one in nine back in 1980. So it's from that point of view, it's a very big increase. It's a doubling. And as that group stays in the household longer, there is the multifamily coming back, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
So the composition of what the typical family is evolving again.
Interesting.
Yeah, just like in the 70s and 80s, we began to have this change in the typical household going from a single family earner to a dual family earnings. We are now seeing a possible change from a one generation to multi-generation, as you say, households.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something to take a look at, because that will, significantly change what people are willing to spend their money on, because housing will be less, large appliances will be fewer need for that. But the other needs, entertainment and other things that people will be spending more money on.
Mm-hmm.
automobiles, et cetera, you know, because those will be the big people will be spending more on. Those things will benefit, vacations, et cetera. Any other questions that you have?
No, not for me, thank you.
All right. Well, if there are no more questions, then I'll let you go, and I just want to thank you for coming on and contributing. It's always a pleasure.
Rich, always a pleasure listening. Thank you.
You take care.
Okay, bye. Bye.